see trees of green, red roses too.
Hello, this is Ed Cohen, editor of GlobalBusinessNews.net, and your host today on Global Radio Talk Show.com. Coming to you today from Washington, D.C. and Old Town in San Diego. Very honored to launch this new series of conversations with executives and subject experts. Our guest today, our very special guest today, is Mr. Sanjeev Joshipura. He is based in Washington. He is an expert in U.S.-India business and public policy, and he is the founder and president of SJConsultLLC.com. Sanjeev founded this consulting and project management organization focusing on U.S.-India business and government relations, global macroeconomic policy, financial commodities markets, regulatory analysis, and he delivers lectures, seminars, and coaches executives. He serves governmental and nonprofit clients as well as the private sector. Let's say hello to Sanjeev Joshipura. Hello.
Hi, Ed. Thank you for having me on. Delighted to be here.
So tell us just a little bit about yourself and why you got to do your own business here. What was your background prior to SJ Consulting?
Well, sure, Ed. Thank you. So I have a background both in India as well as in the U.S., where I've lived, worked, and studied in both countries. And I have worked both on the corporate side in corporate strategy, corporate finance, and project management at various diverse industries, including Fortune 100 organizations in both countries. But I also have worked on the public policy and political side, where I have advised U.S. senators and congressmen on Capitol Hill on international and economic and budgetary and indeed domestic financial services issues. I have run a U.S. Senate political election campaign, and I've led an international trade industry association in the financial and commodity market space with corporate members all over the world, but headquartered here in Washington, D.C. So I'm just blending together my experiences in the corporate world as well as in the public policy political world, and then trying to bridge the sort of the gap between India and the U.S. It's a very, very exciting time for the relationship between both countries right now.
How does the U.S. view India, and how does India view the U.S.?
Well, that's a very good base-setting question, Ed, because it sort of frames our conversation here today. You know, like I mentioned to you, it's a very exciting time in the relations between the two countries. The cliche is the oldest and the largest democracies in the world, but we are moving beyond that cliche to substantive relations between the countries in many, many different spheres. You know, we have the people-to-people connections between India and the U.S., where Indian students are the second highest number of students in the United States after Chinese students. There has always been the software sector connection, where there are so many engineers, software engineers of Indian origin here in the United States in various different software coding and management positions all across the country. So those ties remain, but in addition to that, we are moving to a situation where the political leaders of both countries are paying a lot of attention to each other, as was evidenced by Mr. Obama's recent visit to India, and indeed, before that, the Indian Prime Minister Modi's visit to the United States late last year, in fall last year. And so, you know, India is moving away from its traditional stance of sort of non-alignment, and, you know, not tilting closely towards the U.S. It's moving away from that stance, which it had under previous governments, and is now not hesitant at all to say quite categorically that the U.S.-India partnership is indeed a defining partnership for both countries and will be so in the coming decades and century.
Well, it certainly makes me more comfortable, that's for sure, and I love it. Let's go deeper now. In the context of U.S.-India relations, what's your view of the general business sentiment, not the political now, let's go business, the business sentiment among corporate execs, investors, politicians, yeah, and economists from both sides.
Right. Well, the business side is, of course, a very, very important angle in the relations between the two countries. As is often the case in international relations, the business side is a very important driver of relations, overall relations between any two nations or groups of nations. And I think after the new government in India, the BJP-led government of Prime Minister Narendra Modi has been sworn into power last year, there has been sort of a raft of economic reforms that the government has undertaken at the central government level in New Delhi. And there are also some state governments in various states in India that are at varying speeds reforming their economic rules and regulations and business rules and regulations, which means that U.S. businesses are taking an active interest in India again. For a period of time under the last government, the second period of the last government, the second 5 years, there was a little bit of a stall in U.S.-India business relations because I think a lot of American executives felt that India was not a welcoming place to do business and was, in fact, in some sectors fairly hostile to American entry into those sectors. But that perception is changing on the American side, and I detect a lot of optimism here. Cautious optimism in some sectors, but more unbridled optimism in other sectors. So that's from the American side, and I can certainly go into the Indian side if you would like.
Yes, please drill down on that. Please do that.
Okay, all right. Well, so from the Indian side, I think there is no question that India has viewed America as sort of the holy grail of international markets for a long time in many different sectors of industry. And I'm not just talking about software anymore. In fact, I have been working with clients and companies in India in sort of old economy sectors, if you will, such as textiles as well, where they want to either collaborate or do M&As, mergers and acquisitions, or joint ventures with American partners. So the technology transfer that Indian businesses can obtain from partnering and allying with American companies is second to none in many different sectors. And America, of course, as you know very well, Ed, from your illustrious background as an international business and management consultant, the rules in America are very welcoming, by far as compared to almost any other country for foreign businesses. And so in India, as the businesses themselves in that country get more and more sophisticated and move up the value chain, they are seeking new markets, international markets. And what better market to seek than a country that has over 300 million in population and a very affluent country on the average at large? So, India is looking keenly at America, and there's a lot of sort of a growing number of business delegations and business executives and business deals that occur between India and the U.S., with every passing week and month.
So happy to have you featured as a speaker, thought leader, at our October 27th executive briefing at the National Press Club in Washington. I very much look forward to that time. So let's go to another question about the internal in India, the internal ongoing economic reforms. Why are reforms happening? Was something wrong? Am I just not doing enough? Is that what you mean by reforms? Please explain.
Sure, absolutely. Well, so the thing is, India historically in the past, I think we have to go back a little bit here and go back probably about 70, 80 years or so, because India was, as I'm sure a lot of our readers and listeners know, under colonial British rule for a long time. And after India got unencumbered of the yoke of British rule, they decided that they were going to be entirely self-sufficient and not have any foreign businesses in the country and so on and so forth. And so for a long time, India practiced socialist economics. Although India was always a democracy, but practiced socialist economics. That started changing in the 80s, gradually. There was then a big bang of economic reforms in 1991 under a previous government led by the Congress Party, which now sits in the opposition. where India was in a crisis situation where India only had about 2 or 3 weeks of foreign exchange reserves and, you know, didn't have enough money to pay for its import bills beyond that point in time. And so India was forced to reform to allow foreign currency into the country. But that was then, way back in 91. After that, they did accelerate the reforms under different governments of both the BJP party and the Congress party. But like I was mentioning earlier in our program, Ed, in the last 5 years of the immediate past government under Prime Minister Manmohan Singh, the reforms kind of stalled and petered out. And in order to really make India a more welcoming place for business, in order to unlock India's potential, a new set of reforms was needed. And that is what the Narendra Modi government has started doing. It's unfinished business. There's a lot to be done, but it has started doing. And the reason Narendra Modi's government has been able to start this, which the Congress government could not, I think the primary reason is that they have a large majority in the Lok Sabha, which is the lower house of parliament in India, which the Congress party did not have, you know, that large of a majority, and had several coalition partners that they had to depend on. So the BJP is able to push through reforms in the lower house. Now, in the upper house of parliament, like the United States, where we have the House and the Senate, India also has a bicameral legislature at the center. The upper house of parliament is still controlled mainly by the Congress party, which sits in the opposition. And so a bill cannot become law unless it passes both houses, just like in the U.S., both chambers. And so some of the reforms that the BJP has initiated are getting stalled in the upper house. That said, the primary reason for pushing these reforms is A, BJP's more open economic philosophy, B, the fact that they have a majority in the lower house of parliament, and C, that I think India in general is very, very conscious of the fact that they ranked 142nd out of 189 countries in the World Bank Ease of Doing Business Economic Survey, and they're desperately trying to move up that ladder. In fact, the goal is to move to number 50 in a few years' time.
Let's move on to, well, the famous companies, Infosys and others. India is famous for its large software services companies. But are we beginning to see a boom inside India in terms of startups, new entrepreneurship, innovations, not only in software but others?
Yes, that's a great question, Ed. I think you've sort of really captured the pulse of the entrepreneurial Indian economy. You're indeed correct in pointing out the large, famous Indian software services companies, such as the Infosys and the TCS and so forth, many of whom deliver world-class services to customers all over the world, including many here in America. But there is now a boom that's occurring in the entrepreneurship side on the software products side, which is different from software services. I'm talking about the software product space. So that is essentially what a company like Facebook was way back when it started out in a dorm room. That's what I mean by the software product sector, just to kind of give an illustrative example. You know, India is home to approximately 3,000, actually a little more than 3,000 startups, officially registered startups now. And that places it in, I think, fourth or fifth place all over the world in terms of, you know, any country in the world. America is the leader by far, where we have over 15,000 startups. But India is beginning to catch up. And so far, India has not had its own Indian version of Facebook, so to speak, or, you know, a company that has matured and developed into that kind of, you know, giant, gigantic firm, which is known all over the world. A lot of people I talk to in India are very, very optimistic that that day will come in the future. If not, you know, a giant Facebook, then at least a very, very large billion-dollar market cap company. One thing that I should mention here, Ed, is that I am an advisor. I serve on the advisory board of an organization called the Indian Software Product Industry Roundtable, or iSpirit. And this is a think tank and a market catalyst for the software product industry space in India. And my fellow advisors in India and fellow board members are really doing a sort of yeoman service in facilitating the growth of that sector.
Boy, you're busy. A lot going on here. I have never been to India. What advice do you have for me, for American businesses who would like to go to India and look at doing business and finding a way to do business? Is there some step one, step two, step three that you'd like to share?
Absolutely, Ed. You know, one of the first things that I tell business executives here in America when they are planning to invest in India or set up shop in India or partner with Indian companies is really that India is a continent masquerading as a country. And what I mean by that is I can't really think of any other country in the world where not only does every state of that country speak in a different language, but also within states there is often plenty of different dialects. It may happen that unless two people from India know the same language, that is, in other words, the national languages in India are English and Hindi, unless both people from different states in India speak those two languages, it is entirely possible that you may sit at a table of Indians where they cannot communicate with each other because they only speak their regional languages. Now, this does not happen for the most part when you're talking about sort of the more educated workforce and the elite, people that have gone to undergrad and university and so forth. This situation would not arise. But it would indeed arise with some of the more agricultural category of people, people who work in that sector and so forth. So the bottom line here is India is a very, very complex country, unlike any other that executives have probably tried to enter into in the past. That's one. The other thing is, I think you really need a lot of patience in India. Some executives have the opinion that because India is a country of 1.2 billion people and because it has a, 300, 350 million strong middle class, depending on how you define middle class, that profits will be relatively easy and quick to come by. But that is almost always not the case. In large part, that has to do with the fact that Indian business culture, Indian consumer culture, Indian rules and regulations, the supply chain and the logistical complexities in India, the rules of taxation are all very, very different from what executives might be used to in America. So A, be cognizant of the complexity, and B, be patient. These are the two key points that I would sort of advise to American executives wanting to enter the Indian market.
Thank you so much. This is just eye-opening for me, Sanjeev, and highly educational, of course. I see that you're involved in helping an American company enter into what you say is the Indian renewable energy industry. Could you chat about the Indian renewable energy industry and about your involvement?
Sure, Ed. Without getting into, specific names of companies and so forth, I would like to mention that renewable energy is one of the hottest sectors in India right now. The Modi government is really pushing diversification of energy sources in India. India has been heavily reliant on coal. It continues to be and will continue to be for some time. But there is a keen awareness now in India that coal cannot be the only source of energy for various reasons, including potential issues of climate change, of course, and soot and climate air pollution and all of those things, which are real problems in India. And so India is trying to diversify its energy sources somewhat away from coal and heavily into wind energy and hydroelectricity and solar power and so forth. And the government is really pushing, both at the central level and at the state level. By the way, I should mention here for American listeners, I keep using the word central government in India. That is akin to the federal government, of course, here in the United States. And India, while it's also a very federalist structure, just like the U.S., is not quite as federalist politically as America is. In other words, states in India do have their own rights, which sometimes can trump the central government. But states are not quite as independent in India as they are here in the U.S. in terms of, you know, some of their rules and regulations. But that's just an aside. The point I was trying to make about renewable energy is that state governments and the central government are really pushing hard to help, you know, India diversify its energy sources. One of the main programs there is the Make in India program, which doesn't apply only to energy. It's a very, very broad program across, you know, a vast number of industry sectors. But as far as solar energy, for example, is concerned, the government does give you, or various governments, depending on whether, you know, what state you're in, will provide you with a certain set of tax incentives and so on and so forth if you can commit to making some of your solar panels, for example, in India, and hiring Indian labor and utilizing Indian technology and supply chains and so forth. So, you know, that's something that companies should be cognizant of and take advantage of.
Fascinating stuff, Sanjeev. Your website is SJCONSULT LLC. That's SJConsultLLC.com. And people can follow you on Twitter, right?
That's correct. I'm on Twitter. I'm on LinkedIn as well.
Right. And so on Twitter, it's at Sanjeev Joshipur. Am I pronouncing that correct?
Well, you're pronouncing it right, Ed. In fact, you're pronouncing it perfectly. But on Twitter, it's at Sanjeev Joshipur. In other words, it's my entire first and last name except for the last letter of my last name. The A is absent at the end as part of my Twitter handle. Yep.
Very much, Sanjeev, for being our guest today on Global Radio, talkshow.com, a service of globalbusinessnews.net. Thanks, Sanjeev. We'll be talking again soon. Signing off from Washington, D.C. area and San Diego, California, this is Ed Cohen, editor of Global Business News.
What a wonderful world. I think to myself, what a wonderful